Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, we got a little rain outside. Getting soggy.
Yes, we have. I feel like I'm in the mountains of Bulgaria in my beloved Germany.
Yes, yes.
You know, with this lovely rain purifying and cleansing the countryside, cleansing our nation, purifying our nation. Oh, that kind of sounds like a dog whistle, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of a trigger.
Well, on a serious note, though, we join with our friends in Etcetera in Charlottesville, Virginia. As we speak, a memorial service, an ecumenical service is going on to memorialize the tragedy of this past weekend, deaths and injuries and Etcetera. So, you know, our thoughts and certainly our appreciation, Mr. Allen, should go out to those that are gathered tonight on the campus of the University of Virginia. So this comes in light of a decoration by neo-Nazi fascists, if you will, that they intend to erupt through a number of American cities, challenging the taking down of statues, memorials, and et cetera. So the president has... Oh, you got something there already?
Oh, no. That's for later. I just found something. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, now we indicate our prayers that nothing happens in Charlottesville, Virginia tonight, if you will. I'm listening on my long range set, some beautiful music, ecumenical, people grasping hands and et cetera. It comes at a time when our nation is at a volatile edge, at the abyss, if you will. Tonight's program, phone lines will be open. I'm interested, Don, as you are, as we talk in the pre-production meeting, what we will hear coming out of our own beloved enclave. I was talking to a couple other people a couple hours ago, and have I missed expressions of concern and sorrow and et cetera from political leaders, civil rights and et cetera? Or did I miss it or what?
Mr. Edwards, I don't think you missed it at all because from our 5th Congressional District Congressman to the St. Paul District CD4 to our black elected leaders here in the Twin Cities, we haven't heard a word about anything, condolences, nothing public, awfully quiet here in the Twin Cities.
Let me go to, keep talking. This is a link from CNN. I just want our audience to hear this. This is what is happening in Charlotte, Virginia, as we speak. Hold it just a minute, Mr. L.
Okay. Stand by. I'm getting the audio ready.
Mr. Allen, for our listening audience across the world and here in the United States of America, including our friends there in the training facilities and camps of the neo-Nazis and et cetera, that is music coming from Charlottesville, Virginia. Charlottesville, Virginia, the site of right-wing action. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And we do have that, the audio. It's amazing, Mr. Edwards. I tried to upload it again real quick just on a hunch, and it actually worked. So
okay.
we can get to that. We can get to that whenever you're you feel like it's appropriate.
Now go right ahead. Let's get it, and then we'll open up the phone lines and et cetera, because I'm just interested to hear what you know, thinkers and leadership are saying here in the Twin Cities.
Here you go. This is the Honorable Minister Mr. Louis Farrakhan, who is going to just say something to us.
Don, I can't hear it very well. Is some adjustment we can make?
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I am going to download Mr. Edwards, and then we'll go back to it once it gives me the flag, because it is running kind of slow and quiet, and it shouldn't be doing
yes,
that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Throw
out the phone number. The phone lines are open. They have some callers out there that want to express their observations.
Phone line is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, it looks like we already have a caller. Let's see if we do here.
All right, let's try to get him in. Phone lines are open here on the Don and Rod program.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
How you guys doing?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, partner. What can we do for you?
I was just going to talk about this protest that was supposed to have been and also permitted for the protest of removing a monument, how it was interrupted, corrupted by a subversive paid group.
You're talking about Charlottesville, Virginia, the last Friday.
Yeah, in this particular case.
Yes.
In
yes.
this
Go
particular
right
case.
Ahead, sir.
These whites that came out to disrupt that was paid. Now, you guys are old enough to know that groups like, well, let's not say that they didn't come, in the past they never came out to protest removing the monuments. But when you had groups like, say, the Klan that would march, they was not met by white opposition to the extent of what you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
They went and done their march. And then went on about their business. A lot of times they protest something that blacks wanted to do, I guess, well, we know. But like you see in this opposition with these white groups, these people, these whites are being paid to do this. And there's some subversive, underhand motive that's going on. We've heard the names Soros and the MoveOn.org. This is just totally ridiculous. I'm against taking down people's monuments because, you know, that's a slippery slope. And where would they stop? There's already hearing about taking down King's monuments in locations around the country, especially here in St. Louis.
I understand what you're saying, but let me have to take a little exception to what you just said about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, by a white extremist, if you will, from ambush. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. never espoused or spoke of treason. He never talked of anything against the interest and the safety of the United States of America and her masses of people. Now, these statues such as Robert E. Lee and Beauregard and Jefferson Davis and people like that, these are individuals who were involved in treason against
treason.
The United States of America. Treason.
Are you
now,
kidding?
We're not talking about just some boys running around.
Well, let me ask you a question before we get too deep
sir.
Into that.
Yeah.
Was not George Washington and the Continental Army
George
also
Washington
treasonous?
Was a slave owner. That's different.
No, wait a minute. George Washington and the Continental
George
Army
Washington
was treasonous.
It's not
why come
not
I can't speak, say something? I mean, liberals always want to put words in people's mouths.
Now we're getting you to come on out like you're supposed to be. I thought you was hiding, brother. I wondered when you was going to come up and step up to the plate.
Let me finish saying what I want to say.
Yeah, well, I don't know what you're saying. You're talking about a slippery slope.
Well, I haven't even got out what I was trying to say.
The traitors of the nation? My God, sir. But Martin Luther King Jr. is not in that category. But go ahead, complete your observation.
My observation is that Washington and the Continental Army was treasonous to Britain. They were. And if you really want to look at history, when the Haitians, led by Henry Christophe, came and fought with Washington at Savannah, what was he? Was he accomplice in the treasonous? Come on now. And you know, here's another thing.
How can you say treason against the crown when we are talking about a battle taking place on a different continent? I'm not understanding how. But let me capitulate.
The Revolutionary War, Savannah was here. Savannah, Georgia was here in the United States.
That was certainly treason. So that means that George Washington, Patrick Henry, and all the rest of them, any statues, if you will, any monuments to them need to be destroyed by a nation that rejects the treason of all of them. Okay?
Well, the nation don't reject it. You only got a certain group. And here's another thing. When these black areas where you have these street names after black heroes, Malcolm X, and you have a school building. We have a school building here. It was just built when Barack Obama was the president. It was named after him. It's been gentrified, and the whites just moving in and say they're taking the name off. And they got a right to do that. Now they're
well,
in there.
Well, sir, I know that you
would
stand
agree?
Up to stop that, right? I know you would stand up to stop that.
I know, but blacks don't even live in the area anymore.
My brother, you're not going to push me off the panel as it pertains to
I'm not trying to. I'm just giving you some facts.
No, you're not giving facts. You're not giving facts.
Okay, hey, gentlemen.
So
gentlemen, let's look at this, you know, Mr. Edwards. These folks removing the statues are saying things like it's their right to remove these statues.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not necessarily on the right. These are some young millennials, some progressives that are deciding, white progressives,
absolutely,
that are deciding
that these
statues should not be standing. And I don't really know mm-hmm. who they're protecting and why, but from this side, down on the right, it looks like it's pretty motivated by cash and a very distinct and strategic plan.
In other words, tit for tat. Yeah. We all would agree. Probably tit for tat, and it reflects a nation divided. That is so sad.
Well, it's nothing wrong with you know, you really want to look at the map of the United States and apply ideological thought. The United States consists of about 11 nations. The people in the north, up around Vermont and Maine, don't think like the people down in Florida. They have different opinions. Just look at their consideration of the death penalty. Go out to Oregon. Come back down to New Mexico. Two different thoughts. Come to the Midwest. People in Chicago and St. Louis don't think like the people up in Minnesota. You have, up there in Minnesota, you've had interracial experiments. You come down to
interracial experiments. What does that mean? Going with a white woman?
Well, just like they had in Shakers, just like they have in Shakers County, Ohio, where they intentionally try to integrate communities.
Just outside of Cleveland. Is that what you're talking about? Just outside of Cleveland? Yeah. Okay.
Where they have intentional efforts to try to integrate communities.
What did this have to do with what happened in Charlottesville? The violence and the injuries and the death. What does that have to do?
Well, the
with
injuries, the death. It's unfortunate that the death happened. Of course, the death happened from an individual who was a criminal, and he needs to be punished. In Durham, North Carolina, where you had this one female that climbed up and participated in pulling down that statue, she's been locked up and facing felony charges, and rightfully so.
Should we shoot her? What should be a punishment? Should we shoot her for tearing
she's
down that?
She's facing federal. She's facing felony charges, and
is
rightfully
right?
so. She
for,
should be tried
for pulling down a statue of a traitor. Okay. Gotcha.
The state of North Carolina has a state law that the legislature is the only one can give the okay about moving statues.
Absolutely. We know that. We've seen that. That was the AP had that. That's good. What else? What else you got for us?
Hello.
I don't want to talk all the time. You learn by listening.
I'm listening to you.
I'm ready to listen to you.
No. I have nothing to say to you in regards to what it is you're talking about. You have your opinion. You are a man of your opinion, and hold to people's opinion. Absolutely.
All right. We can agree that all blacks are not the same.
We can agree that all blacks are not the same in the United States.
That's right. I'm sure you can agree to that.
God bless America. No, don't interrupt me. Don't interrupt me when I'm talking to this conservative gentleman. God bless America.
Okay? America is a great place. Absolutely.
It's a beautiful place, a beautiful country. You know, just because we had something called slavery and segregation, what the hell? These white folks have been good to it.
Well, all blacks was not slaves.
Yeah, we know that. Yeah, about 3% weren't. Okay, next point.
3% is enough. It was more than 3%.
Enough for what? But you know what? You know what, George? You know what? They didn't write you into the Constitution, though.
And the 14th Amendment, anybody born in this country is a citizen of this.
They didn't write you into the Constitution.
As I said before,
in the 14th Amendment in 1787,
anybody that's born in this country is a United States citizen.
That's 100 years.
Mister, why in the world do you try to cut people off?
That's what I'm doing. We have the power. We have that power. We do it just like they do it on white networks.
You have power on Zuckerberg's platform. He's a white man.
Yeah.
He makes it possible for you to be able to talk.
No, not really.
As long as you pay your money.
Long before Zuckerberg in New Jersey, we had talk radio. So get that one right. But what else do you have?
That was then. We're talking about now, sir.
Oh, you're talking about now. So what are you talking about in regards and reference to now? Because this conversation started out talking about Charlottesville, Virginia.
I made my comments on Charlottesville, Virginia.
You've taken us on a journey that is great, and it's a conservative journey. And God bless you, my brother.
Well, I'm not your biological brother, but I understand what you're saying.
I'm not talking to you in terms of brother biologically. I'm just talking to you in terms of referring to you and not disrespecting you.
Well, I'm a caller from the Midwest. That'll be fine, sir.
What's your name?
Great. Thank you.
That's great. I don't know. You called the program. Don't you know the name of the two hosts?
No. Where can I find it out at?
If you got
here, Ron and Don?
Ron and Don.
So which one is Ron? Are you Ron?
I don't know. Have you figured it out? Why don't you figure it out? It'll come to you.
Well, how am I going to figure it out if you don't tell me?
Well, you obviously haven't been listening before.
You haven't been listening before.
I was trying to be polite
so I can address you by your name. I don't like to say hey and stuff like that.
I don't know anybody said hey to you. You know. But
hey, we have other callers.
Well, look, I'm going to step back and listen, and you guys
go ahead and carry on. George, we appreciate you stepping back, brother.
I'm the caller
from the Midwest. Yeah, wherever you're calling from.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Hey, Mr. Edwards,
where did you get in from, Don? What area is he calling out of?
I 314, wherever that is. But anyway, that's a clone number.
That's a clone number.
Mr. Edwards, 314.
314. Oh, 314. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. First time we've ever heard from him. We've been on for 10 years. That's good. He said he's calling from the Midwest. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, all right, what we got? We got any more calls? Yeah, we do. We have a lot. And Mr. Edwards, we were talking, that's St. Louis, Missouri, where he's calling from. But Mr. Edwards, we have a couple more callers, but we were talking about how silent the candidates were, with the exception of Mr. Alfred Flowers. And we are happy and jubilated to have Minneapolis mayor candidate Al Flowers live on the air with us right now. Al, how you doing?
Oh, okay. All right. Welcome, Flowers. Go ahead. What do you have? Go ahead.
That was a, you know, that brother, I don't know what to say about
that brother,
him.
That brother was rather clever. Only problem is I identified in a half a minute who he really was, you know what I mean? Yeah, he's the kind of brother works hard for the man. Works hard for the man.
And I was gonna say that zip, that area code is St. Louis. That's where my people at. He must be out there. He got to be out there in the country part of Missouri to talk like that. You don't find too many brothers in St. Louis talking like that. I don't know where he came from. So, and what he was saying, I thought that was
absolutely.
You know that he wasn't even worth. You know, when you saw those same people.
I kind of disagree. Somebody like him, because he used to be the snitching boss on the plantation. He was
right.
The snitching boss.
Yeah,
he was the one that
sat
around the fire, and as you boiled and fried that old pork that old master was giving you.
Samuel L. Jackson and Django. Samuel L. Jackson and Django.
There you go.
What are you doing on that horse? What are you doing on that horse?
That's right.
Yeah.
We haven't had no more. What can we do for you?
Thanks for giving me the opportunity talk to say, you know, at least say something, you know, what's happening down there in Charlotte and Virginia was I thought it was a disgrace, and I still think that, and ain't nobody gonna change my mind about, you know, we can do better than that, but that's what we had as a country, as you just said, Ms. Sarah, we there as a country and black folks like yourself, either like Donald Trump said, we both everybody wrong, but it was only one group down there, neo-Nazi Ku Klux Klan and the rest of them. So we've been fighting this our whole time. So that caller there just kind of told me off, because I ain't never seen nobody trying to degrade black people, talking about 3% of was free in slavery, and 97% of our people were beaten, lynched, hanged, and so brother, wherever he was calling from, you need to stay there. Don't come that way, and then don't say we think differently. I was born in St. Louis, Missouri, raised in Chicago, Illinois, lived in Minnesota over the past 30 years, and my thought process ain't changed, and I would never think like he was thinking, but you got the right to do that.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the beauties of being in America. And by the way, I think he was calling out of Kirkwood, Missouri, right there on the western side of St. Louis. Appreciate the brother calling. By the way, the brother must have been given this assignment, because he clearly was the first caller. Clearly he had been told by his handlers to get in on them Negroes as quick as possible and try to talk slick. He needs a little bit better training, if you will, and if he calls me back and tells me his name and gives me an address, I'll put him in contact with the CIA, and they can do a little bit more work with him. He needs a little bit more work. He needs a little bit more refinement.
that's how it was, you know. But I'm glad to get the opportunity to call in and say, you know, I officially filed. We signed all the papers to get ready to get on the ground and run for a mayor of Minneapolis. I know everybody think there's a lot of money out there. They got millions of dollars they've already spent. They just spent over $1 million-something, and they are going to spend millions more. And they talking about using super PACs in the mayoral race in Minneapolis. They said they're going to use super PACs. Because the reason they're doing that, because they really don't have a vision to move us forward and stop some of the madness what's happening, particularly to minority communities, particularly the African-American community, within the education and the violence that's has came down on us. You know, the death and destruction that's coming down on African Americans that nobody wants to get in the way of. They don't want to jump out there. And Mr. Edwards and Don Allen, you know, they've been doing this year after year. Every 4 years, they come back and say they gonna stop it, and then they never do it. And they so this time we want to tell the truth. Our campaign is Truth to the People. www.truthtothepeople.com. If you go to it and get on with us, I want to push the agenda for everybody. We all should be treated equally. We were created. Everybody was created equally. We should be treated that way, but we're not being done. It's not being done.
Mr. Powers, let me ask you a question before we let you go, because Mr. Allen and I in our production meeting were, you know, going over this, and just last week on a program, we had some people called in. They were saying that, you know, we are too negative, that we provide too negative and much information, et cetera, whatever that means. Is there some reason that there's been silence from the mayoral candidates, except for yourself, sir, with regards to what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, and the posture and posturing of Donald Trump over the last 3-4 days? Can't quite get his narrative together. I think we saw the real Donald Trump today. We saw an angry white man who happens to be president of the United States of America. If you will, he wanted to know his base. We use that reflection quite frequently nowadays. He wanted to let his base know that he's with them, if you will, irrespective of carrying flags that are everything contrary to America, if you will. I'm talking about the Nazi flags, the swastikas, and all of that, and et cetera. But why has there been this silence, except for you, sir, with regards to what happened, and to join the debate as it pertains to, racism and Confederatism and et cetera in America? Is there something at play here that we should know about?
Well, I think here in Minnesota, particularly in Minneapolis, and the way they operate, and when I talked about what the violence and these things that have been going on, Mr. Arrow, you know, for as long as you've been doing activist work trying to fight against it, and they never can come up with a plan. So and the reason they can't never come up with a plan, because they always said, we'll choose your leaders in the African-American community. And they continue to choose wrong. They don't. They want the people that know what to do and how to do it to try to save young African American kids and boys and girls. They won't let them in it. They never use an organization that. And that's what I always keep hopping on the Urban League. Put somebody in charge that you can hold responsible for what all this death that's going on. If you pick individuals that's out there, they got their own agenda. So most of them have their agenda. So you got to put it in the hands of somebody that you can hold accountable, so we all care. Because we attack each other more than the white people. Look what the guy just got off the radio. He was got off the show. He was attacking and defending the boss. He was one of you call him a straw. They call him a straw boss back in the day, didn't they?
They called him the whipping boss, actually.
Yeah, he the one that when you say 3% is okay, and 97% of our ancestors and descendants of the descendants of slaves, which I am, when you say 3% was all right to be free, and 97% was all right to get hugged, lynched, and beaten, and things like that, then you the brother is confused. So when you look at Minnesota, it's no different when you say Minnesota nice and what they do in Minneapolis, and they try to control and dictate, and that's what they're doing now when they finna spend all this money. It's going to be tons of money spent, and They'll try to buy our community out. They're going to go to our community, but it's going to be a hard sell this election. It's going to be a hard sell for us to sell our people.
Let me cut in and tell you this, and this also is no news to my associate, Mr. Allen. Be advised that the Department of Justice has cut off all funding for our community relations and community services, if you will, across the country and right here in the Twin Cities. The Sessions administration, Department of Justice, has indicated that money can be better spent putting African-Americans in jail, rounding people up as a part of the new war on drugs, if you will, a new war on our a threat to the national security, et cetera. So it's interesting that you said that, because the money that the police departments and communities have been working off of for community policing and et cetera, that money has been pulled out. In fact, one of the things that's happening, similar to our what happened with the president's our manufacturing commission, quote unquote, and business council, is that there are some resignations being contemplated. Star Tribune has refused to deal with this story, unfortunately. But there are some, and particularly black academicians, gentlemen who are contemplating resigning from these policing committees and et cetera. And one of the entities wiped out, Don and Mr. Flowers, is something you may, want to ask your associates and et cetera, is that the John Jay program, which had been so highly touted, John Jay College in New York City, that program has been eliminated as of yesterday. I mean, a sudden announcement and communique from the Department of Justice, from Jeff Sessions, former Grand Master of the Ku Klux Klan in Alabama, if you will, now Attorney General of the United States, that we won't be dealing with this community relations stuff anymore.
Mr. Edwards, if I could respond, I think that's why right now, today and coming in the future, people like yourself, our civil rights activists, our elders, the one that know that this was coming. This is not, see, a person like me, I listen, but it's some that was up under the younger millennials and all these other ones. They weren't expecting nothing like this. They act like racism just hit here. They were talking about white supremacy, but they didn't know what they were talking about. Then when it hit them, they all were like they in shock.
Yes.
So and the reason they in shock with some of our young activists, so-called activists, I think a lot of them is in for themselves. They just want to get their profile up and raise money. They making more money. The ones that was calling the other people was saying other leaders were poverty pimps and all that. Now they the ones that are receiving the resources to do nothing.
I need to interject, gentlemen. Go ahead, Mr. Let's step right on up.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Appreciate that. We're going pretty hard here at, everybody, as we should for this. But I'd like to bring it to a home front. This report came out of the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights candidate Flowers, and Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights is doing less than 1% in small and underutilized businesses. And I want to ask you, as a candidate running for mayor, what will you do to change that, Mr. Flowers?
Mr. Flowers, on you, sir.
Well, I think we have to strengthen that. We have to have a mayor that have a civil rights department that can be a civil rights department more than ever, from what Mr. Edwards just said, what Sessions is doing, Jeff Sessions is doing, the attorney general is doing right now to scrap out affirmative action, to scrap out anything that's racial equality, he's knocking that all out. So now Minneapolis need better than ever a civil rights department that will really fight civil rights, and that you can't go down and tell them no, even if they're guilty we got to cover it up. We got to have a mayor that will not let them cover it up no more. We got to fight back, and we got to fight from the ground. And that's what I'm doing with this campaign. We got to go on the ground. We got to get people to get out and know it's going to be all right if you participate. And you got to, and they got to be educated. You got to, they have to listen about their history, so we don't have to go all the way back like you just did with the first call on the show, and he talking about things or miseducating. That was miseducation of our young people to say what he was saying. It was I'm still willing from what he was saying. And so, Don, what you saying, we got to have a strong civil rights department. We used to have both a civil rights department and a commission, but under the last mayors, R.T. Ryback and now Mayor Bessie Hodges, they depleted civil rights period, but they just got it there in name only. So we got to strengthen
that. On that particular point, Mr. Flowers, is that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission has not actually had a public hearing on anything in 6 years.
That's sad.
Crazy.
You know, that's sad. And what we got to tell. That's what we got to teach out. You know, they stripping things away from you. And when you talk about their compliance, they've been out of compliance for the last 10, 15 years. They've been doing this a long time, and we've been letting them get away with it. But I think we've been letting them get away with it because we haven't been unified in our efforts. And then we got some that's supposed to be doing civil rights compliance and making sure that people are working, and
right,
they're not doing it right now. I'm in arguments about that right now today, and sometimes it's with your own people.
All right, Mr. Flowers, yeah, thank you. I'm getting text messages. We're getting calls. Mr. Allen coming in from outside.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, we are.
State
yeah,
of Minnesota.
Are.
People are wondering what the heck is going on up here. Mr. Flowers, thank you for taking the time to give us a call, and the best
appreciate
of luck in your campaign. All right.
Okay, thank you, Don. Thank you, Ron.
All right.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Phone line open. It looks like we're going to have – this is a good one. I like having these topics.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Ms. Lisa Marie, speak your mind.
Oh yeah. So thanks for taking a call. I was listening to the show, and it's kind of interesting that we have our elders, since we're having a generational type conversation when we talk about the millennials and our elders. One thing we did leave out is we left out the Generation X, which is a generation that I belong to. So listening
okay.
to this.
And we apologize if we did that. We didn't do it intentionally.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right.
Okay.
One thing I want to say to you, Mr. Mr. Edwards, who I do respect, you're our elder. I wanted to mention the Utopia Mouse experiment, because that's something that I just really had. It touched on the social issues that's taking place in our community. And then one thing that I wanted to say, as far as we have this person who called in and said we all don't speak the same language and all that. And that is true, you know, but that is due to our lack of education within our community, which is something that our elders should be passing down, you know, passing down that knowledge from one generation to the next. And so one thing I wanted to say to Mr. Flowers, today I had walked into a politician's office, and I had asked, you know, them to use their platform to unite our community, because when we look at what has taken place within our communities within the last 3 years, you know, even before Jamar Clark, there has been a lot of division in our community, and it's been behind politics. So before, we have a lot of people that jump on the bandwagon of trying to be politicians, but they need to use their platform to either unite our community or be united themselves. And we can use our senators, Barbie Jo Champion and Mr. Hayden, as an example. They always work together. So why can't these people who are running for office today get together and unite our community? Because as we see in Virginia, our community, there's a threat to our community. And just like the Millennium had always been marching and chatting, white supremacy, now it's in our face. It's in our face now, and we need to be able to deal with that. So how are we going to deal with it? It's they've been talking about it in marching, but they were being laughed at last year. Now it needs to be defined. And who's going to do that? Which generation is going to explain this, and which generation is going to step up and make sure that our community don't really, really be subject to this? Because these rallies took place on our college campuses.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And there's been tremendous information during the day-to-day as the white Fourth Estate is taking a real serious look at what is happening and the widening division in the United States of America. I think Mr. Allen and I would say to you, though, that as elders, that we are doing what we can in regards to these programs. Because, see, one of the things that we had kind of insisted on that we would do that neither one of us would be the head of somebody's organization because there's just too much pressure can be brought to bear.
Yes.
And so we have a certain independent flow that we can initiate, kind of faucet turn off and on and et cetera. So as communicators, we try to keep the information out there. How people deal with it in their particular areas of discipline, then that's them, and they have to be judged and made accountable on that. And I agree with you. I've been in this battle since 1958. And
yes.
I've seen a lot of things happen, a lot of things come and go. I've seen a lot of quote-unquote giants, if you will,
mm-hmm.
come and go and et cetera. And unfortunately, I've seen more betrayal than
yes.
I have seen successful resolution. So appreciate the observation.
I want to say one more thing. Can I say one more thing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
You know,
yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Tomorrow, Marcus Garvey was born. And so when we think about the black movement, the black liberation movement, and when we think about how we are educating our community, and when we think about the generation that's holding people accountable, let's not leave out Generation X, because we are here to hold people accountable, and we need you all. If you don't give us a baton, we're going to take it. And so that's all I
want to
say.
Sure. And I see no problem with that. Revolution is good. Revolution
yeah.
is
Amen.
Good. I mean,
that's right.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Right.
Not going to be wrong.
All right. All right. Thank
mm-hmm.
you, dear.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right.
So
Mr. Allen,
we
got the calls
yeah.
coming in. Go ahead. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, before I get the next caller, I just need to say that, you know, that betrayal piece that you said is really huge, because what are we going to do? Because we know right now, I mean, both of us, you and I, Mr. Edwards, we got the dirt. But we know that when it's a mission for the black community, there are those in our community that will run to the front of the table behind closed doors with the people that are supposed to be setting this up on behalf of the black community, take the money and run, and leave the people who actually want to do the work kind of out there in the field, you know?
Okay.
So how do we get past that point where we can collaborate? I could use names, but I'm not going to go there right now. You know, where, you know, one person is the lead, but the other person decides that, okay, we want to cut you out totally and walk to the bank, you know, and make a good living off our people, off using, like, North Minneapolis for a petri dish of disparities. How do we get past that before I take our next call? Here?
Uh-huh.
And calls over to get to all of you. So that's my question.
Up in the air. Yes, but and let me just say, you know, based on the question asked by my colleague, I would suggest for those that, you know, like to work on the computer and et cetera, they need to go back and get that Department of Justice, which was before Jeff Sessions, a report that was made that talked about the events surrounding, even leading up and certainly after the occupation of P4. And it's entitled Maintaining First Amendment Rights and Public Safety. And actually, it is actually for North Minneapolis, but actually it's for the entire city. Something that you said and that Mr. Flowers said, what is happening right now is being has been anticipated, and so we need to take a look at it. Mr. Allen, I'm getting some text messages. People trying to get through, so we're talking too much. I am. So go ahead.
Okay, here we go.
Our
next and calls.
Right.
We're gonna get to everybody. Let me just get this next caller in. He's been holding for a minute. 816.
Okay.
You're live on the air. Go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Allen.
816.
Mr. Edwards.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Mr. Hi.
How
are you? How
you doing? Out of Missouri. All right. 816. Out of Missouri. Okay.
Yeah. Can I just make a little say something about that first caller you had?
Yes, sir. Out of St. Louis, allegedly.
Yeah, I don't think that gentleman understands what patriotism and treason is. I mean, I don't think he understands the definition of them. I mean, we don't see, how many statues to Benedict Arnold do you see? How many statues to Julius and Ethel Rosenberg do you see? They're traitors too, just like those Confederates. Those Confederates were not Americans. They fought against America, and they actually had to take an oath to become citizens of the United States. And remember that they fired first on Fort Sumter. They took down the American flag. So, you know, that gentleman
put up the stars and bars.
If he doesn't think there's a problem with these people, then I would suggest that maybe he can make a statue to Kim Sung and Kim Jong Il or something. So those are people who hate the United States too. I mean, maybe Mao Zedong or people like that, millennials who don't know who they are.
I think that's a doggone good point. Absolutely excellent point. But go ahead, sir. You have any questions for us?
Yeah. I really had a question for you, and I know that you've talked in the past a lot about these, I guess, facilities or training camps or something that a lot of these right-wing, like neo-Nazis and stuff have, and could you, like, just tell us exactly, like, where some of these places are?
Two of the largest and most proficient in the area of excellent training with former military personnel and even with some current law enforcement officers are, one is located in the area of Sandpoint, Idaho, up there in the mountains. Excellent territory geographically for training, if you will. And the other one is at a place, and I'm not being funny, sir, is a place called Mars, North Carolina. That's where the terrorists, the white terrorists that killed 9 African-Americans in their church at Mother Emanuel's AME in Charleston, South Carolina. Those are two outstanding facilities, if you will, that the ultra-right, whatever they want to call themselves, the Confederates, the sons and mothers of the Confederates, et cetera, they have been training for a number of years, and that's why I'm kind of saddened when I see so many of these liberal commentators since the terrible events in Charlottesville on Friday evening and Saturday and et cetera, pretending that this snuck up on us, you know what I mean? Now, for those of us, and Mr. Allen said it a little while ago, and I've been saying it, and I appreciate it, sir, for quite some time, there have been many different incidents. We've named one already where 9 African-Americans were gunned down in cold-blooded murder by a white supremacist and et cetera, who everybody tried to say he was too young to know what was going on. Don't you find it interesting that the youngster now being held in the Charlottesville city jail is the same age as the individual, the murderer in Charleston? And, in fact, this is a young man now being held for the murder in Charlestonville, is that this is a man we now find out, a young man that beat and assaulted his own mother, who is confined to a wheelchair. And I noticed that they've stayed away from that. They of course, have talked about the deceased, if you will, a beautiful American, and et cetera. But they really have tried to stay away because here's a young man that joined the United States Armed Forces a couple years ago and lasted about what, Mr. Allen, you're looking at your computer. He lasted 2 months. Now, he was clearly a detriment to whatever the features of the United States military. To your specific question, sir, two of these facilities which send out death squads, and by the way, there were 3 African-Americans murdered in Virginia after the event of Saturday at 3 different locations in Virginia. Yeah, but, of course, unless you know the specific county or community, you don't see it You know, in fact, up here, sir, we had a situation, and Mr. Allen, you can't find it anywhere on your computer. We had an individual shoot and kill three other individuals at a racing track, you know, a dirt track, if you will. And there was no reporting at all on the local media here in the Twin Cities. It was a place called Union Grove. So in case anybody wants to challenge us, such as the gentleman that called from St. Louis, Union Grove, Wisconsin. Gunman came in, shot and killed three people, okay? No, nobody says anything. But I hope that I've given you the background, our Sandpoint, Idaho, and just outside of Mars, North Carolina.
Yeah, well, it kind of brings up another question. And it's one that you had also talked about a few months ago, and that was the radicalization of some of these young people. And I was wondering what you thought about how they've become radicalized and why we aren't talking about it in the same sense that we, you know, kind of talk about young Muslims or something.
Because since I talked about that about 3 months ago on my television program here in the Twin Cities, I have been informed by reliable sources that there was to be basically a restriction on raising the question about radicalization as pertains to Caucasians.
Mm-hmm.
Except today, of all places, on CNN, I heard a contributor slip up and raise the question about radicalization. No one wants to talk about radicalization. We used to talk about it as very young African-Americans way back in the 1960s about who it was that was conditioning these Klansmen at that time, Klansmen, the sons and daughters of the Confederacy, neo-Nazis, and et cetera. And we basically find that we are opposed by people who say that that's not a proper discussion. I think it's a great discussion. I think that same kind of discussion we have about Islam, if you will, and the radicalization of young Islamic fighters and et cetera, we should be having the same thing about these neo-Nazis, if you will, these white nationalists, white radicals, and et cetera. Now, let me say that there is a heck of a program. I hate to say it like this. I'm not promoting it, obviously, but there is a heck of a radicalization program that has been in play in and around the Sandpoint facility, as well as just outside of Boise, Idaho. And the feds know it. a lot of law enforcement know it. But the word is that radicalization as it pertains to white terror should not be discussed in America.
Hmm. Oh, then I also had another, just I want to get your thoughts on, because apparently coming up this week, it seems like there are going to be several more protests or demonstrations or rallies in several cities from a lot of these right-wing groups. So I was just wondering what you thought about it.
Here is my thinking based on intelligence information that I've been able to access, and it's one of the reasons, in some regards, that we didn't have more casualties in Charlottesville, Virginia. And that is, if you look real closely at the pictures and et cetera, you will see really a very reduced number of African Americans on the street. The strategy initially was, particularly with those very heavily armed defense groups that you saw marching with the Nazis and et cetera. In fact, I mentioned when I saw them, I thought that they were special forces. Later found out that they are ex-veterans, particularly of Afghanistan and Iraq, where, you know, we've certainly killed a lot of people of color. And by the way, the only people that we really warred on since the end of the Second World War, with the exception of a brief one-week engagement in a place called Serbia, has been nations of color. So, you know, really our military strategy in the United States is basically to only fight wars against people of color. That's the reason the president is talking about he's going to go into Venezuela now, you know, and kill some Venezuelans and bring order. But to your specific question, these sites have been identified on a number of websites and I had conversation with some of your representatives earlier today. The cities that are being looked at, one of the cities that is being looked at for a significant competition is Boston, Massachusetts. And I think that you may have a list of some others that have been posted just probably in the last, according to some text messages I'm receiving, just in the last hour and 15 minutes.
Let's see. I think that I know San Francisco and New York, I think, are supposed to have some coming up.
San Francisco, New York, Boston, yes.
And I think Austin, I think there's going to be one in Austin also, if I'm not mistaken.
Austin, Texas, yes, that would make
Texas.
Sense.
Yeah, and trying to think of some of the others. I don't know, in the Midwest, I don't recall any in the Midwest, but I think there might be one possibly in Portland. I'm not sure.
That's interesting, sir. I talked to associates where you know we've already had white neo-Nazi violence that cost the lives of two white Americans, one a 25-year veteran of the United States Armed Forces. Both of them cut to pieces as they attempted to, and they did. They did protect two young women of color, one who was a practicing Muslim, if you will. That individual cut them, killed two, and wounded one other person. Portland, Oregon, though, has had along with Seattle, two specific targets that the ultra-right, and actually coming right out of the White House, are talking in terms of making an example of. Now, concern about making an example is that they are clearly concerned about bombers. And there was a reason for the so-called sting operation 2 days ago that arrested a young Caucasian, once again about 21, 22 years old, who thought he had a truck laden with high explosives and was going to detonate it in downtown Oklahoma City in memory of Timothy McVeigh. And that's for the millennials and et cetera that don't remember, don't even know, Mr. Allen, who Timothy McVeigh was. But if you talk in terms of the damage that he wreaked and et cetera. So the word is that Seattle and Portland and San Francisco on the West Coast are being looked at as significant targets of opportunity. And these militia are well-armed. And the reason that that part of the West Coast is because their training facilities are right up there in Idaho and in northern Washington. See, we have kind of been told, Mr. Albert and I have kind of been told, we shouldn't talk about stuff like that. Designated sites. We shouldn't talk about it. It's not American or un-American or whatever you want to call it. There is a confrontation, a series of significant confrontations, as the extreme right said in some text messages today. They feel that they have been, encouraged, if you will, embodied, and et cetera, by the position of the President of the United States, that they are good people, whatever the heck that means.
I kind of had one last question for you, and it's kind of a general question, and that is, we've gone through about 7 months so far of this administration. How resilient do you think not only the black community is, but how resilient is this country? I mean, what do you think we're going to look like a couple years from now? I mean, how bad is it going to be?
If the Congress of the United States does not begin to seriously talk in terms of the possibility of a warning to the president, privately and, you know, in behind closed doors and et cetera, and the possibility of how he is moving closer and closer to impeachment. But you see, their problem is they all want to return to their soft jobs, so they don't want to do anything before or during the year of 2018, midterm election. And I find it interesting that some of the talking points, gentlemen, that are coming up in the last 3 or 4 days indicate that there will be a more serious discussion on impeachment in 2019. To your question, sir, I think it will be too late. I think that once we really draw the blood and see the blood drawn, as white extremists are saying right now in the United States, I think we will be beyond the point of no return. and we do not have the leadership at this point, particularly in Black America, that we had in the 1960s, that would talk in terms of kind of turning the other cheek, or having a strategy to deal through the violence, the bombings and the killings of little girls in churches, the blowing up of NAACP presidents, if you will, white supporters being shot on the highways of Alabama and et cetera, et cetera. I don't think that we have that kind of will and initiative. And Mr. Allen and I talk about it quite frequently. We certainly don't have the history to the extent that the argument can be made that don't allow yourself to be trapped. But I think that we are probably one situation, one confrontation away from something that will happen that will forever damage this nation being able to unify.
Yeah.
That's my own personal observation based on long experience going back 50 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'm going to have to – that's really my last question for us. I'm going to have to listen to you off the air. But
all right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you calling and asking the
question.
Yes, sir. Sir.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Allen, go ahead.
Okay,
what, you got
caller?
Anything else? Go ahead and get the call.
Caller,
who we got?
3046, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yes.
Caller, you're live on the air.
This is to Mr. Edwards.
Yes, sir.
Hello? This question is Mr. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, I was doing a little research on the civil rights movement in the 62-63 era of Minneapolis, and I was trying to figure out this gentleman by the name of Mr. Milton Williams. Who is this gentleman, and what was he doing after 62-63 and on?
You said Milton Williams?
Yes.
The gentleman that you're talking about was not here in Minnesota. I don't know what the gentleman was doing. The gentleman was residing in Cleveland, Ohio. But Mr. Milton Williams now goes by the name of Mahmoud Al-Khatti. So that's who you're talking about. He would have arrived here in 1967. So he wasn't here 62, 63, 64, 65 or whatever. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, he arrived here from Cleveland, Ohio. He was born Milton Williams in, Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a next question I want to ask you, because there's a lot of people I see that claiming that they're part of the civil rights era, and if you look at the 66 years, in the 66, 63, 66, a lot of these guys were like kids themselves.
I know that unfortunately happened. The mayor's husband made that mistake a couple months ago, saying that he was a Black Panther, and there were never any Black Panthers here in Minneapolis. The closest to somebody that looked like a Black Panther with a beret on and an Army field jacket was the late, and I want to be very respectful because he just passed in late 2016, was the late Eubanks, Matt Eubanks, who came here from St. Louis as a organizer for the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. So Gary Cunningham had made the statement that he was a Black Panther and was a part of the uprising of 1967 and 68, because they're getting ready to do some kind of ceremony on the disturbances of 1967 and 1968. In fact, I think it's Public Radio is supposed to be doing a piece, and they have a young Asian reporter. She has been researching and et cetera. So Mr. Cunningham made the mistake saying that he was a Black Panther at that particular time. Unfortunately, he would have only been 8 years old. I mean, I know we're Don and I are going to be criticized, but you sort of asked a question with a requirement of specificity and detail, and I don't give it to you.
Yeah, because the reason why I asked that is because there was another article in the Final Call stating that you all had a spokesperson here that's supposed to be close to the federal overseers, and I believe his name is Henry Spike Moss.
Harry. Harry Spike Moss.
Harry Spike Moss, yeah. And he claimed that he's been watching police brutality ever since 1966.
Probably has been watching. But when you talk about leadership, 1966 in this town, it was Gwen Davis and Cecil Davis, the late Reverend Stanley King, if you will, even Harry Davis Sr., now deceased, who had just been put in charge of the Urban Coalition, not to be confused with the Urban League of Minneapolis, but the newly formed Urban Coalition. Mr. Moss was not in a leadership role at maybe a couple years later. I'll have to leave it at that, but he was not. And again, I've identified, and I would refer you, sir, if you're doing any research, I would refer you to newspaper columns, Minneapolis Star, Minneapolis Tribune, those two newspapers who then later merged, has all of the information about who was the leadership in the city of Minneapolis in the period of 1966, 67, 68. I hear that a lot about people who say that they were a part of the civil rights uprisings of the mid late 1960s. They need to kind of remember that you can always go back and pull up newspaper pieces, if you will. Now, a lot of the folks were very much active by the early and mid-1970s, but that 1960s was a very tough time, if you will. As I said, Matt Eubanks had come here from St. Louis, had been brought here by the Lutheran Church, if you will. There were others. There were the Urban Rangers, which no one talks about because most folks don't know about them, because they weren't around. The Urban Rangers were the counterpart to the existence of other black organizations in other places, like the Black Panthers. But I want to clarify that too, because I've heard a lot of people talk about Black Panthers. That there were never any Black Panthers in Minneapolis. There was an attempt to form a Black Panther chapter in St. Paul, in a building at 500 block of Selby Avenue in St. Paul. It didn't work out. It was exposed, as was a similar operation in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I'm saying this for all folks that got their computers in, et cetera, and all you have to do is click in, Cincinnati Black Panthers FBI sting operation. St. Paul Black Panthers FBI sting operation.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, is Mr. Allen still around?
Yes, sir. Mr. Allen.
Yeah, I'm right here. I've been listening.
Mr. Allen, I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Allen, what's going on with Rich Stanek? I mean, I understand he got beat up at the Las Vegas Sheriff's Association. Ain't nobody talking about that. What's up with that?
Not Las Vegas. Reno.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfortunate. I mean, he's kind of a 6-foot-something guy, and whoever is beating on the sheriff, you know, I think that he's going to have to deal with him. Yeah.
He put a straining order out on the gentleman. What's up with that?
I have no idea. I was not at the event, and I've only read very little about it. So.
Oh, he hasn't talked to you about it?
And it's in the court in Nevada. Yeah.
Oh,
I was surprised when I heard it.
Well, I got another question for you, Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen, how come we haven't been hearing too much about the two white Caucasians that left the Uptown Diner to participate in the march in the...
What? Where did that come from? Where did that
first
come from?
I posted that today, that Uptown Diner on 26th and Hennepin, that used to be the old Burger King back in the late... early 2000s, I should say, and then Burger King moved out, and that private owner came in and made it a diner. Yeah, he had employees leave and go participate with the marches here locally, and they also Did they not also post something on their Facebook page or something like that for the diner?
Was,
and
the waitress young lady was dressed like Eva Perón. Eva Perón.
Mm.
Did you say the two chefs at the Uptown Dinery? Now they were with the people, right? They weren't with the Nazis, were they?
they were
dressed to die in their regalia.
Mm-hmm.
You mean they had swastikas and stuff like that on?
Two employees. Yes, they were ready.
I didn't see too many swastikas, but boy, those suits look real authentic. You mean
those
they had
the
SS uniforms on? Let me be clear what we're saying here on our national program. You mean they had SS uniforms on?
Oh yeah, authentic uniforms. Didn't they look like the kind you buy at the costume store?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many black folks in suits they spit in.
You remember the old present police chief Tim Dolan, the one that he was regaling around at the police function there went on with the swastika on his arm? Yeah, like that.
Oh, wow. In our beloved Minnesota?
Yes, but let me
kind of ties into the father of a young man who went to the march as a Nazi. That father in Fargo, North Dakota has to be commended and respected because he told his son, "I disown you. You can't come into my house." Probably needs to be more of that. But you know, I've been surprised because I heard the brother that does the United Shades of America, Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Hill, Brother Allen, Brother James. I heard him. He was in a state of shock. He was on Don Lemon two nights ago, and a guy who was a cook and waiter, whatever, at a cafe that Brother Hill went to in Berkeley, got fired from his job a couple of days ago because his boss caught him on YouTube, et cetera, with a Nazi flag and et cetera. And I understand a whole lot of people done run into unemployment all of a sudden after being identified on these websites. Not a very healthy thing. Anything else for you, Brother James?
Yes, I got one other one. What do you all think are we going to get as far as a mayor and a new police chief?
Well, I have to say, I'll just kind of cut Mr. Allen off and then turn it over here. I think we already got our police chief who will be here for 18 months. As it pertains to the other thing, I don't know, man. I noticed that the Star Tribune has done a peculiar thing. I noticed they have not published any polls. Have you noticed that, Mr. Allen?
I was getting ready to chime in. Yep, nothing.
Yep. Well, Brother Flowers said they're finna use Super PAC money, so you know when they use Super PAC money, it's going to be like a mystery lottery who gets pulled out and who gets bumped up.
And particularly when we're doing a sister of a system of ranking, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, all right. Well, that's my thinking, Brother Allen. What's yours?
Well, I'm looking at Ray Dean, Jacob Fry, and Al Flowers. I'm looking at them three, those three right now, and I'm a little concerned about Nikema Levy-Pounds because there are some people in the sisterhood that think she should be mayor of Minneapolis. And you talk about the opposite of white supremacy. You have it right there in a nutshell, and I don't think that we get anything done. It'd be like the black female version of Trump in the mayor's office. We'll get nothing done. And so with that said, you know, and the second thing is, you know, she's never come clean on the estimated $4.5 million for the Black Museum. What happened to the money? Why last week was the Somali community celebrating the fourth or fifth year anniversary of their museum that they opened for 50 G's, and we had an estimated $4.5 million and couldn't do it? She hasn't answered for that yet, so she doesn't deserve my support. And last but not least, why isn't the Somali community up in arms about this white supremacy stuff? And I'm going to answer that for you because that was a rhetorical question.
Well, Mr. Allen, the Somali community has been bottled up in fear because of one Somalian police officer's neglect. Do you hear me, Mr. Allen? The whole community is bottled up in fear, just like some of the black, leaders of the community bottled up in fear, and a lot of them run around here telling you, "Oh, I'm a Christian, and I got faith, but you know, I got fear before I have faith." Drop the fear
Some of our Somali people would call in and speak. We've had them call in and indicate they're just in the queue. That's an interesting point that y'all have just made about the quietness on Trump. But, you know, some folks have to be scared of deportation. I mean, come on.
I tell you who wasn't scared to speak up for Mr. Trump. Mrs. Amorosa, his side piece sister lady.
Oh, the honey out of Hollywood? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she just attended the Black Journalists Association's convention, and she's not even a journalist. And I think a lot of the sisters feel a little appalling for her to pop up in a place where she's really out of her place.
Yeah. Well,
let me get in here. Hey, Brother James, that just adds to the division, okay? What you're saying is that Omarosa cannot support or be who she wants to be, but yet she's a black woman. They do the same thing with Condoleezza Rice. They say that she cannot be a Republican. She cannot support. We're not going to like her because of this or because of that. And so that widens the divide. And I've read a lot of those articles about the National Association of Black Journalists who came here last year and didn't frequent one black business. And millions of dollars were spent here. So them Negroes can't say nothing about nobody.
What black business is there here?
What's that?
What black business are here?
What businesses do we have here?
We have to be careful on that
because that takes us into the Super Bowl.
Yeah. We have forgotten.
Brother James, why don't you stay with us? Mr. Allen, I think we had an announcement that we promised about the Super Bowl, the deportation of black folks out of downtown. Could you just enlighten us with that? Because that's a hell of a piece of information.
Here's what's going on. We have another caller that we're going to have to get to right after this. But what's going to happen is almost 2 weeks, like they did in Houston, almost 2 weeks before the Super Bowl guests start to get in and get settled here, and during the Super Bowl and afterwards, they are going to be Hennepin County. Sources tell me Hennepin County and the city of Minneapolis is going to be shipping the people in the shelters downtown to the northern suburbs where there is no bus transportation on a regular basis in the downtown Minneapolis. And I don't know what kind of incentives yet. I am waiting for some more information to get. I will get first thing in the morning, actually. And we're going to have those details. And this information comes from someone who actually was staying in a shelter who contacted the Ron and Don show and said, "Hey, we need to break this down because this is what's going on." The city does not want to see what's happening here in Minneapolis Knights. But Mr. Edwards, we have someone that's been holding for a long time.
All right, thank you, Roger.
All right,
go ahead, Don. Get that call.
Thank you.
Let's get him there. All right,
caller 5195. You're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello, caller. You're live on the air.
Yeah, can you hear me? It's John in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I hear you.
Go ahead,
Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, real quick on Donald Trump. I don't know if you touched on him much tonight.
Yeah, we did. Go ahead.
I have a theory about Trump. Is I'm not a Trump supporter, but I voted for him anyway. Because
you're an honest man. Okay.
Well, no. Here's my theory, guys. I thought he was going to do such a bad job that what it was going to do was going to bring everyone together on both sides a little bit more once he left. Maybe like a scorched earth or just let the whole thing go to hell type of thing. And then the aftermath will be a little bit better. I think that's a real possibility. You know, I don't think at the end of the year, I think it's 50-50 if he's still going to be president by the 2018 when that comes in. So I just like your thoughts on the theory that it's good what's happening now, because he's going to make things so bad and do such a poor job that it's going to force both parties somewhat and people to come together once he's gone.
Mr. Allen on the right, and then I'll speak from the left. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Appreciate the question, Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been watching. I too voted for Trump, and I'm looking at him as someone from reading his books and understanding, you know, his business acumen, and I thought it would be really, really great. I'm a little concerned because of the media attacks, the liberal media, and sometimes the media on the right that has gone after him and had the American public basically focusing on everything he did, from what he wears to his wife going to the bathroom, whatever, and he cannot do anything right. And I'm just wondering, is the media going to pull back? Will they pull back? Will they change their narrative, or will they just be so vicious and keep going in? Because if you look at the whole picture of what's going on, the agent provocateur is the mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC, Rachel Maddow, all these people that they won't make any money or get any commercial ads unless they talk in detail about Donald Trump, which is not good. And it's not good for America. It's not good for anybody. But I can't tell the future. Last year I wrote a story on July 25th that he would win, and he won, and so I was happy about that. But now, you know, my crystal ball is very foggy. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
I'm just the opposite on the left, if you will. I think the call out of Philadelphia has raised a interesting narrative, a frightening narrative, a narrative that I think is already in play in the United States. In fact, I think that our caller from the 816 number here in the Midwest really also sets the tone. I think that the damage, the chasm, if you will, the abyss is running so deep. And I just don't think that this man has the mental and spiritual commitment to listen and start making a change. Now, earlier, if our caller from Philadelphia is still on, I, for the first time now, am hearing our discussions about the fact that the military, particularly in light of the position articulated by the Joint Chiefs this afternoon, that the military is becoming very concerned with regards to the mental stability of the President of the United States. I don't know if we're talking about a coup d'etat, if you will, or whatever, but the other thing you got to remember in this country, particularly after what happened to President Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs failure, you know, airplanes and helicopters fall out of the sky all the time. Oops. So I have to say, gentlemen, that I agree that I think it will take a series of circumstances in which somebody will convince the Donald, if you will, to step away. But it will not happen until the 2018 midterm elections, if it's to happen at all, you know. But at some point, you reach the stage where it becomes extremely dangerous to have a constitutional challenge in the form of impeachment, if you will. And I just don't think this country can stand that. And so that's my position. Thank the call out of Philadelphia. Hope we answered the question. Any more calls coming in, Mr. Allen?
No more calls at this time.
Okay,
no more calls at this time, Mr. Edwards.
Well, I think... Yeah. A very enlightening program, as far as I'm concerned. I think we need to watch very close. We're watching our monitors here now in studio, and looks like things are going okay in Charlottesville, Virginia. But the caller from 816 raised a serious question. That information is now being posted that the extreme right is saying that they intend to bring fire and fury. That's interesting. Domestic scene.
There was a
go ahead, Mr. Allen.
I can't find. Yeah, there was a video on Facebook of a white supremacist
talked with a shotgun, talking about killing black women and children as they walked out of the stores and the shopping malls.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he had his weapon. Yeah. He had his AR-15 next to him. And he was serious. And I don't know
yeah.
who posted that, but I don't see it anymore, so they might have pulled it down. And I was looking for that because I said, these guys are nuts, you know.
That's the same thing I'm hearing and the same thing that I'm seeing and the messages that I'm being texted. That's why we, I think, gave the analysis on the Pacific Northwest, Seattle, Portland, and then the Bay Area. I'm just afraid, man, that that's going to happen. And I just mm-hmm. don't know if we have the fiber, if you will, as a nation, and I'm not sure that Black America has the fiber to be able to deal with that kind of action. You know, we had a hell of a president when Charleston, South Carolina took place, and Mother Emanuel AME Church. We just don't have that kind of fortitude and integrity. At this point, this is just my observation. I very well could be wrong and be correct. God knows I hope that I'm corrected. But what you just said that you saw on one of the postings, I think that's real. I watched some of the interviews done by Vice Network, and I know we're wrapping up. And them guys are not playing, man. I mean, I'm watching a cat with his AR-15, AR-16. He's got three handguns, mm-hmm. you know.
And by the way, for those of you that are wondering who pulled down the statue in Durham, it was 22-year-old Tanika Thompson, a black woman, taken into custody.
And she's been charged with a felony. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Don't get her
all
out.
Right, Mr. Allen,
yeah,
man, James Brown, if there's still enough time left, let James Brown take us home, my brother.
He'll do it.
Ah.
All right. Here we go.
Bad stuff. Bad life.